The Becoming Unsilenced podcast is about awakening to the greatest potential you always were. Listen to teachings, interviews, and inspiring stories of others who have challenged the accepted, expanded possibility, and merged modern-day life with ancient wisdom to discover their greatest potential. When you become fearless, you become limitless. Now be inspired by today's episode.
Welcome to the Becoming Unsilenced podcast today. And today I have a treat for you because we have a little bit different style of a guest today. And I have with me the amazing Arthur Fratelli. And just to kind of let you know where I originally met Arthur is he was the hypnotist who came and did a post-prom show for my daughter's post-prom a few years ago. So, but let me share just a little bit of info about Arthur with you before we dive into our conversation. So, Arthur is a speaker and inspires audiences to move beyond the past and seize the present, making every moment count in real and meaningful ways, using everything from gut-busting comedy, hypnosis, to science-based brain training. Arthur's highly captivating community-building presentations teach you to harness the hidden power of your own subconscious and become your most powerful self, which is why we're talking today, right? So Arthur brings his show to many different audiences, shares mind-blowing shared experiences, but also packs an inspirational punch, training listeners in the science of the brain and unlocking their true potential. Audiences gain a deeper understanding of the value of practice and the power of their own subconscious. And Arthur's straight from the heart energy motivates any organization to get moving, take full advantage of every moment, and overcome imagine limitations to become the people they want to be. We'll have Arthur's a link to his full bio on in the show notes, so you can pop over and check that out. But welcome to the show, Arthur.
Hey, thank you. That bio sounded so good. I can't wait to listen.
Yeah, right? You're going to be inspired by yourself today.
I think so, yeah.
Well, I wanted to have you on because of this idea of how tapping into the subconscious mind can help you to create your greatest potential. And of course, the title of my podcast, Becoming Unsilenced and Rediscovering Your Greatest Potential. So that's very key. And in this season in particular, we're going to be talking a lot about the power of the subconscious mind to do that. So how did you get interested in this stuff?
Oh, fantastic. First of all, thanks for having me on. Yes, this is a fascinating topic to me. I met a college professor when I was in my second year of college, and he was teaching our psychology class. And I was absolutely fascinated, especially when he brought out a television and showed us his hypnosis show, where he had performed at a high school post-prom. And he had all the students up on stage, and they were pretending to be Elvis or Michael Jackson or something like, you know, all these silly things. They the classic quack like a duck or, you know, bark like a dog. And I was in awe. Just why are these people doing this? What is it that he has done to get these people to do that? Well, he offered a class to become a hypnotist, and I couldn't say no. I was absolutely thrilled with it. And ever since then, I've been traveling the country. It's been full time. I've been doing it for 22 years. So that's where I got my first spark to get interested in the power of the subconscious and what we're all capable of.
That's so intriguing, and also shows the importance of the impact of a teacher and a professor and someone role modeling something new to you.
And now that I can step back all these years later, I can look at him as a mentor. You know, at the time, you know, he's a teacher and everything, but now I look, he was kind of an archetype I could base my business on.
Yeah.
He had already done it. And they always say success leaves clues. And I looked at what he did. Now, granted, he was sending out VHS tapes of his performance, whereas now, you know, it's all instant social media. So things have changed, but the message is the same.
So that's so cool. So that inspired you to get interested in this, to take his class, to become a hypnotist. And so what is this journey?
Especially on stage. Yeah. Yeah. That really inspired me.
Yeah. So I imagine you have some fun stories of how that's gone down with audiences over the years. I remember the night that you were at the post-prom presentation. I think we laughed. I probably laughed more that night than the kids in a long time. So how do you bring this idea of the power of the subconscious into your presentation and connect it in a way that helps people get curious to explore that more?
Right. So what I do for my presentations for professional groups is I need to remind people that we all have this inner critic in our head, and we don't often remember that we control that inner critic. And what hypnosis and using, if you don't like that term, just using your subconscious, that will turn that inner critic off, or better yet, turn him into an ally. Mm. And what I found is you can use your subconscious to get your critic on your side by keeping him busy. You know, you got to give your inner critic something to do, because otherwise he'll start looking for the negative. And you'll see it. If you're familiar with Mystery Science Theater 3000,
oh, yes.
A TV show. Yes.
The little heads, they are all
that's
yeah.
Your critic.
Any
that's
hours your critic. Of MST3K.
Okay, so you know what Gen X, you know what I'm talking about. Yeah. So that is your brain. It is out there looking for things to comment on. And what I found is if it finds something to dwell on, it will look for more and snowball. So if you're depressed, you keep looking for more. Oh, I've got bad luck. Oh, it always happens to me. And before you know it, your critic is doing all your thinking. So what hypnosis has enabled me to do is to take that inner critic, turn it off, retrain it to look for the positive things.
Ah.
And to me, you keep that inner critic busy by teaching it skills. Because if you're consciously focusing on something, your critic can't speak up over you trying to learn a skill. And when I say learn a skill, I mean anything from ballet to throwing darts to anything that requires conscious focus. And I've seen it work miracles, especially with kids who their minds wander. If you give them a deck of cards and have them shuffle or practice or get into it, or watch a kid build Legos, their inner critic isn't bugging them because their critic is working on the map. You know, oh, I got to put these Legos together. How do I make this? They got to follow the directions. So to me,
and I know you're going to give us a real life example of that.
Yes.
in a little bit, but we go there. So I have a couple other questions for you before we go there. So define more clearly for us, I'll give you my words and then you can mix them around or define them however you want. But I see that we have like the subconscious, which is this, like maybe there's things down there, kind of programs running that we're not aware of. Mm-hmm. We're unconscious of them. So we kind of then we're unconscious of the things that are happening in the subconscious. But then to change some of those things, we have to bring them to our conscious mind. So maybe how would you describe those terms, and what do you even think? What is the subconscious?
Sure. So by age 7, you're basically programmed by your family, your culture, everything you grew up with, your values, whatever you're told by the adults around you, you're going to believe. There's a theory by a scientist named Bertrand Russell. It's called Russell's teapot. And it is basically this universal fact that however you're raised, you're going to believe whatever they told you. And the example he gives is, if you were born in a community that everybody believes a teapot is floating between the rings of Saturn, as an adult, you're going to teach that to your kids, because that's what you were taught. The Jesuits have a saying, give me a child till age 7 and I'll give you the adult. And that means, you know, all that programming you're teaching them, their values, everything. So you have no choice about that. This is like stage 1 in your life. Of if you were to read Friedrich Nietzsche's got 3 theories of how you become an adult. And the first one is the camel stage, which is a camel carries a heavy burden. They have no choice what they do. They go for miles without water. This is you learning how the world works. You have no choice.
Yeah, the kid has no filter to be common.
Yeah, you didn't choose to be born here, and what you're being presented with reality is true to you, you know?
Yeah.
So if you're raised in a family where parents say, hey, you're really a bright kid, and you're going to grow up thinking that, whereas if you're treated the opposite, you're going to grow up thinking that. So this is all your base programming. And to get out of these negative ruts, this is where your subconscious comes in handy, because the subconscious doesn't have a critical factor. It doesn't question anything. It accepts what it's told for truth. Whereas your conscious brain will go, well, hold on, is that true? I don't know. When you see a hypnotist on stage and people are hypnotized, the reason they're going along and saying, yes, I'm barking like a dog, is because that conscious brain is switched off and you're not critical. You're not questioning. It's at that moment that you're able to absorb new information and consider it true. So when you're hypnotized, you're open to these positive messages. So think of positive affirmations you tell yourself. In hypnosis, it's like they're amplified and supercharged.
Because there's no resistance to them lodging it and kind of rewriting those things in the
subconscious. Right. So when you're in the subconscious state of mind, you're no longer questioning things. You're just going to accept it that, yes, I do believe that I am capable. I am strong. I am whatever. Whereas if you were to just talk about it, you might look for evidence to support otherwise, because that's what your critic does. Your critic wants to go, no, I've got bad luck. Remember that time in sixth grade when I tripped in front of the whole school? You know, it digs those things up.
Yeah.
I saw a presentation one time where a gentleman said, I want you to look around the room and tell me everything you see that is red. And then he said, but what did you see that was blue? And people are like, oh, I didn't even notice. Well, that's what your reticular activator in your brain does, is it makes you look for like. So if you tell yourself, I'm a very unlucky person, you're going to look for that all the time. When you tell yourself I'm a lucky person, you're going to say, oh, hey, look, of course, I got a rebate on this. I'm a lucky person. You know, it's all up here.
And then that can get into what people call the law of attraction, when actually it has a lot to do with the subconscious programming.
Yes, it's that reticular activator. And it's, you start telling yourself, I'm a lucky person. And then what do you know? You start looking around going, hey, look, my kids are healthy. I am very lucky. And you start realizing you're thankful for the smallest things sometimes.
Yeah. Wow. You know, I do a lot of this work with the people, the clients that I work with around trauma, because in neuro-linguistic programming is one of the tools that I work with in helping people. It's just exactly what you said. Some event lodged in their subconscious as a trauma, and trauma doesn't have to be a huge thing. It could just be, you know, your mom forgot to pick you up from school on time.
So true. That is so true.
It's just how your brain perceives something and filters, and then all of a sudden the rest of the lens of your life becomes through looking through that lens. And when we can go back and remove that lens, things are different. I think it's the exact same thing you're talking about.
It's exactly what you're saying. It's funny you say that about how sometimes as an adult, you've got these issues you're dealing with. First of all, as a parent, my goal is to make sure my kids spend as little time on the couch as possible when they're an adult with a therapist. But no matter what, there's going to be something. Like you said, oh, my mom picked me up. That is a perfect example, because that's the way a kid's mind would. And as an adult, they think back, oh, you know, that was their trauma, you know.
Right.
But to other people who face child abuse, that they look at you and go, really? That's your trauma? You know, but to them, yes, it is. Cause it's like you said, it's the filter.
Right. It's the filter, and it's the emotional response that happens that lodges that in. So cool. Well, the other thing that we discovered that we have in common is this teacher in Eckhart Tolle, The Power of Now. So how has his teaching shaped your work?
Yeah, well, first of all, I should tell you, I was pretty skeptical at first when I heard about him, because someone introduced him as a prophet. And I was like, I don't know. Well, when you listen to him, he doesn't call himself that.
Yeah.
And he's so well spoken when he describes what it is. And as soon as he said, when he was young and he was feeling depressed and suicidal, he said, why do I feel this way? And he realized, well, wait, who is this I and this feeling? And there's two separate things. And when he was able to separate himself with his taking the breaths and breathing and being in the moment, you realize, I just let those things drift by like a river. You know, let these negative thoughts, why did I think that? Well, now let it go. And that's so helpful for OCD and ADD and so many things that has helped with, just the being aware of your thoughts and letting it pass and finding a thought that you want to dwell on.
Well, and not letting your inner critic that you mentioned before convince you that those thoughts are true.
Yeah, you got to let them go. That's right. Yeah, that is a big part of it. Is why do you believe these things are true? You know, just because someone told you them, that doesn't make them true. And why do you give people the power to tell you who you are? You know, that's a big part of it. But yeah, I've really enjoyed all of his work and his interviews, and I think he's done fantastic stuff. And I oftentimes find myself saying, the power of now, get into the moment. The moment of now, get into it. I like to call it the momentum of now, because I feel like if I ever get stuck in the past, which is depression, or the future, which is anxiety, doing a physical thing, exercise, going for a walk, getting outside, making sure that I'm doing something I like to do for a few minutes, or a skill that you can build on, that will take me out of the past or the future. And I think I've seen it work wonders with other people too.
If you give I know you're big into neuroscience, and that change of state physically changes things happening in your brain, in the different parts of your brain, which allows you to snap out of that quicker.
Right. 100%. I totally agree with that. Because if you're ever depressed, the best medicine is exercise. Get up and go. There's also been a lot lately coming out about lux ratings, LUX, which is how much sunlight you get.
Yeah.
And there's been a lot written that your body reacts best if it is up when the sun is rising and you're getting those rays in the order of colors that they arise, that they rise. It actually goes to your brain and makes you feel better. And if you think about it, thousands of years ago, all of our relatives, they were up early planting food or hunting, and they would go to bed early so they could get up the next morning. So you go to bed, when you wake up with the sun and go to bed with the sun, those lux ratings have an effect on your life and how you feel. And there's a lot written about nature also, that just going out to be with nature is a very calming. I mean, everybody who goes out there, you feel better when you're out in nature and you get away from the fast-paced modern world we live in. That really resets your brain too, things like that. But especially if you have several techniques here, the lux rating thing I've read quite a bit about. And when you combine that with a proper sleep schedule, I think so many people in our culture, especially now with the binging of all these shows, it's so easy to stay up all night and pay for it the next day. And having a schedule makes all the difference, right? But the schedule has really, really been life-changing, I think, for so many people. So that's a big thing for me.
Yeah. Breaking Bad has me hooked at the moment right now.
Oh, and then you're going to go start watching Better Call Saul. See, it's never going to end.
No, I already watched Better Call Saul.
You watched it in the opposite order. Okay.
Well, see, I have to admit, I watched Breaking Bad before once a long time ago, and then I hadn't watched Better Call Saul, so I had to go back. So
those shows are addictive, though, especially with, it used to be, we'll watch the one episode and next week we'll tune in for the next. Well, now you can watch them all eternally.
And they just auto send you right onto the next one to keep you hooked.
So, and then if you like that one, they got another recommendation of something similar. Don't you worry.
Yep. Well, so talk to us about the skill building. You have a really powerful example of what you did for yourself in skill building.
Yeah. So I have kids of my own, and I've watched as my oldest, who's now 21, I've watched as he, as a child, he learned how to juggle and he learned how to do magic tricks. And I watched him as he just blossomed from there. Now, that may be for someone else, that may be piano, or that may be public speaking or dance or whatever. But I was fascinated to watch that when my kids were focused on a skill, they become more confident, they become more capable, they want to take risks because they know they failed in the past, but in the end they were successful. So all those little failures leading to success, I think, is really important part of learning, which is why the juggling in particular, my little boy was 10 and he was so frustrated, he just couldn't do it. And then one day it clicked and you could see his whole mind shift, go, eureka, I got it. Yeah. And then that made him question, how can I learn more skills? And it's basically, you're teaching yourself how to learn, and you really find yourself when you're learning a skill. If you absorb yourself and immerse yourself in doing something, you can't focus on anything negative. You want to do this. And so I had carpal tunnel surgery a few years ago. My hands, it was very painful. When you're trying to sleep, you can't sleep. It's like someone sat on your hand all night and you feel this numbness and you have to rub it and all this. But first of all, get the surgery done. They didn't put me to sleep. You're wide awake on an operating table. no earphones, no sunglasses, those big lights, and you hear all the little snips, and it was not fun. And you just lay there like, oh gosh, I hope they know what they're doing.
Next time, huh?
They don't give you, they wouldn't let, they don't allow headphones because it's a clean environment. Oh, they don't want to introduce anything. Yeah. So, but afterwards, my hands were very weak. I could barely make a fist. And I needed to do physical therapy, but I wanted to do it where I would get a skill out of it at the end. So what I decided to do, and if you'll excuse me, I'm going to step off screen for a moment to get a deck of cards.
Yes. And then, so for those of you who are listening to this, he's actually going to do some demonstration. And if you want to see that demonstration, we'll try to describe it as he goes along, but you can actually pop over to the YouTube channel and find this episode and actually see the demonstration.
So you learn so much when you learn a skill. You learn, it's a journey. Every skill is a journey. And what I'm about to show you took me a while. I found a video of a card player, and they do this shuffle called the Pharaoh Shuffle. And there's the basic way to do it is you take your 52 cards, you split them in half, and you shuffle them together. You've seen this in movies like Maverick or any Western. And you do this. Now, this with two hands is pretty tricky, right? So that's pretty tricky.
Okay. Well, and you just split the deck and putting them together.
Yeah, and I made it look pretty easy. I'm not going to lie, because that took me a while. And what the idea here is you're using these little micro muscles in your fingers and your wrists to do this, right?
But yes, that's what really, all the card sharks do. I always wanted to be able to do that.
Same. That's why I learned this. Because, okay, so I found myself unable to use my hands very well. So I got a video of a guy shuffling with one hand, and I watched him. Okay. And he went like this. He took the cards, and this right here took me forever to split the cards in half.
Wow. You have
slide them over with one hand. Now this, at this point, when I was learning, I would have dropped these everywhere. Several times these would have fallen for days. Then I lined them up, and you slowly squeeze. And I watched the video. The guy has the cards up, you squeeze, and they all went together. I could not, it would not work. It would not work. And my muscles all here were just burning. So eventually I found an expert card shuffler, and I asked him, why will they not go together? Well, here's part of the journey of learning. He said, that video you're watching is from 20 years ago, and the bicycle card company no longer makes their cards to shuffle face up. You need to turn them over, because the grain of the cards is cross-cut in a new way. So for days, I sat there wondering why this wouldn't work. That one simple change from a mentor, that advice from a mentor, made all the difference.
Oh my gosh. So you have to shuffle them face down.
I would have never known that. I thought I was physically incapable, but I found someone who knew what he was doing. And he said, those are almost impossible to shuffle that way, because the grain, the way they're cut, they're fighting each other. You need to turn it around. So this is another example of, it's like a journey. Every time you want to learn a skill, I had to go find the wizard on the top of the mountain to teach me.
This is why coaches are so important for all of you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You need a mentor. Had I not found him, I would still be going, yeah, I can't do it. I don't know what I did wrong. But you find someone, and that's what's fun about learning a skill is, you need to go on a journey. And that journey is like a microcosm of your life. That's one little journey of thousands you're going to take. Me not being able to do this, you know, because they will not go together. But when you flip them over, no problem, they go right together. But then, so my goal was to be like the Princess Bride when the pirate Wesley, Dread Pirate Wesley says, Dread Pirate Roberts, he says, I'm not left-handed, and he does it in the other hand. So I had to learn both hands.
Okay.
So doing that has made me confident enough to teach other people. And now, you know, you can do it with both hands. Not only that, not only is it cool, but it makes you a more interesting person, if nothing else.
You have something to talk about at a boring tea party, right?
Well, when I'm hanging out and people have a deck of cards, they don't want to play with me once I do that shuffle. They say, no, thanks, I'm not playing with you. But more importantly, my wrists are back to normal, beyond normal. They're way stronger than ever. And it's just it's a great thing to do for exercise. And I've reminded myself, oh yeah, you can learn anything. I highly recommend it. I don't know if you've ever heard of the book. It's called The Compound Effect. And there's another one called I can't recall it at the name, but what it comes down to is a lot of people are born thinking they can't learn things. Like, oh, I don't know how to do it. You got to remind yourself, you can learn anything, especially nowadays. Get started and then find someone who knows more than you. You know, find an expert. Yeah.
Talk about what's happening in your brain when you're learning that. The wires, the synapses that are.
So what I call this the subconscious handshake. And if you have kids that play Mario Kart, I love watching this because I've got five kids and I've watched over the years how they'll sit down to play Mario Kart and we'll hand them a remote that doesn't work. And they're convinced they're playing at age 3 and 4. They're like, oh yeah, I'm playing. Well, when they finally start to play for real, it is the most frustrating game for those five-year-olds. They're crashing. They can't keep their car on the road. They're throwing the remote. We've had to buy a television because of this. a remote went flying, and wouldn't you know it, time for a new TV. But once they spend enough time consciously thinking about what they're doing, there's a handshake between your subconscious and your conscious. And what's actually happening is you've kind of unfrozen this gene in your brain to allow you to have that skill. So these skills reside in all of us on some level. You have a skill to play basketball, so do I. Did we unlock it by putting in the hours? Maybe, maybe not. But when you're going through that handshake and giving the skill from your conscious brain to your subconscious, it's now background noise. You no longer have to think about shooting a basket. You can talk while you do it. So I think it's about 20 hours for some skills, like teaching driving. I think it's about 20 hours before you will drive without having to consciously always remind yourself of what to do. And when that happens, your brain is now using a much smaller part of the brain because you've built this little mechanism through repetition that it's now background noise. And now I used to have to concentrate to do this. I had to think about what I was doing. Now I can do it and have a conversation, chew gum and walk. And that's what it comes down to. It's an automatic thing. And the more of those little things you can get, it fights off Alzheimer's, you keep your brain going, you're building those little brain connections and you make them thicker and thicker. And that's why I recommend, like, I think the juggling is really good. Any skill like that, I can, especially if you give a child a skill, they become so confident in it that they're able to go, you know what, I want to learn something else. And once they are capable of learning, especially I think at a young age, when they have this love of learning and adding skills to their repertoire, I think that's really important. So I'm a big believer in doing that, if for nothing else, just your own sake, you know, to remind yourself how amazing you are. I mean, we're amazing people. We really are. You don't realize all the things you could learn and do and be.
And confidence is built. I think that you mentioned this either before we started recording or in the process here, but how much confidence is built and comes from yourself when you build that skill, and then that translates into other areas of life.
Yeah, and that's the magic of it. It doesn't have to be the same. It's not just one thing. You're going to be confident if you're good at karate or if you're good at throwing darts. You're going to get a confidence about something. And not only that, but it's a cultural thing too. It's like, then you get to learn. There's this thing. There's certain ways to practice to get the best benefits. This is going to blow your mind. So at Stanford University, they did research where they would have people practice a skill-based thing like shooting baskets, and they would play during your 20-minute practice, they would play a tone in the background. And when you're asleep, the scientists would put, when you're in REM sleep, they put the tone in your brain, and they were able to watch your brain think about the basketball game earlier, like Pavlov's dogs, kind of. So that bell tells your brain, oh yeah, remember the basketball thing? And at night you're rehearsing while you're sleeping. So you've heard that before. Every night you fall asleep and you're in REM, you're practicing those skills from the day. Your brain is cashing out what it doesn't need, but it's going, hey, what did we practice today for 20 minutes? Oh yeah, it was the juggling. Let's practice that in our brain. That's why you wake up the next day and you're like, oh, I'm better. I'm better at this skill. Because the skill really is being born when you're asleep. And then you refine it all day consciously. But then at night, your subconscious is refining it. And they're able to stimulate that and amplify it to where using the tone at night, it's getting much better results. Like I can't remember the exact numbers, but it was much better results in practice. And since then, they've started introducing smells like lavender smell in a room while you practice. And then when you're asleep and your brain is like triggered to rehearse.
Powerful.
And they've also done it with touch. Yeah, and if you want to learn more about that, there's I'll give you resources that you could go more in depth. But when I first heard that, I had to listen to that several times to understand it, because to me, that's like, that is some mind-blowing stuff. If you're an athlete and you're able to do this, people are reporting that they feel their skills are getting way better in whatever their field is.
I call this partnering with your brain for change.
Good.
Yeah.
I like that. There's been so much written about that, there's also a thing called non-sleep deep rest. And what this means is when you're done practicing a skill, you're supposed to take about 5 to 10 minutes just to think about what you did. Think about it and get calm. Before I'm finished, I'll teach you one of the breathing methods that a lot of people use to change the way your blood and is flowing to your brain to get you in the moment of now. But the non-sleep deep rest combined with, I really think it's important to learn about your craft. So like if you're into basketball, you use that non-sleep deep rest time to study basketball, to learn about basketball, to watch basketball, to talk about basketball. Because what that does is that reinforces your practice. Because you can see other people, your brain will watch other people shoot and go, oh, add that to our information about how to shoot a basket.
Yeah.
So it's all encompassing to do this. To me, it's like you want to immerse yourself in that culture because you learn about the heroes of your art. You learn about the heroes of your craft, and then it gives you something to shoot for too. And you learn they were all beginners too. Michael Jordan was not born great. He had to practice at it. He put in more hours than anyone else. In fact, he was cut from his high school team, I think. He didn't even make it until he started really working for it. And it's stories like that will remind you, oh yeah.
The extraordinary can be done through the ordinary.
Yes. Yeah. And you've got to put in the time, though. That's the thing, is you've got to really put in that time consciously, you know.
Yeah.
And I find it fascinating. The whole learning skills things to me is so underappreciated because it really does take you out of your world of problems, real or imagined. It will take you out of that and just let you relax and focus on something. And I think humans, we're all supposed to be learning stuff and doing, we're supposed to create. We're all supposed to be creating on some level. There's an artist in all of us.
And let's talk about that creating, because this is kind of where I wanted to come to as we kind of wind down and ease our way out of this conversation today. Is I think to be that creator, we have to come to that point of understanding that we are the solution to the problems that we have. And so talk about that for a moment, about the exploration, the belief that you have about kind of coming back to your own self.
Yeah. Okay. Very good. I love this whole concept of it's all in us and up to us, but it's a journey and it's different for everyone.
Yeah.
You know, you'll get advice from people, things that work for them. Well, that's them. That's different. They were a different family. And what it comes down to is, stop comparing yourself to others, because you don't have the same life. You don't have the same genetics. You don't have the same gifts and talents. Your gifts and talents are different. And when you start looking at yourself only and not what your neighbors have and your peers, that's when you start seeing the progress, and you focus on what can I do to make myself 1% better today in some regard. And that snowballs over time. And I've seen it with exercise, and I've seen it with, you know, eating healthy, and all the way down to philosophy of how you live your life, you know, changing one's life.
And I think before we started recording, we were talking just a little bit about all the various different religions and philosophies of the world, and how at the baseline, they have this one thing in common of bringing you back to yourself.
Yep. That's what I think any good philosophy would have, that, right? Is you got to look at yourself. And you learn from those who have taken those philosophies. Like, are you familiar with the Stoic philosophies? You've heard of cognitive behavioral therapy.
Right, CBT. Very well trained in that.
So those are all based on the journals of like Marcus Aurelius and Epictetus and Epicurus, and their journals were found. They never intended anyone to really find these journals, but the stuff in there is like, the things those people had to go through in those Roman times were just horrific, you know, plagues and invasions and people losing their children and just horrible things. But in these journals were things like, well, this may be happening, but what can I do about it? It's me. I need to go find the answers. It's not, oh, woe is me. Why did I end up this way? Oh, the world's against me. Yeah, it's like, well, that may be the way, but get up and face the day. You have to take it on. And there's so many good quotes from those. You know, one of my favorite quotes was, a person has two lives. The second begins when you realize you only have one. And when I heard that, I was like, oh yeah, I've kind of wasted a lot of my time here. I better get to work. You know, and the number 1440, you know, we only got 1,440 minutes a day. Let's use those minutes to become the kind of person you want your kids to talk about, you know, when you're gone. Like, hey, my parents were awesome. You know, my parents, they had faced tough times during COVID, but they got their stuff together and they were heroes. You know, I want to look at it like it's your lowest day and you're in a reality TV show and you wake up and the camera crew is going to follow you around. I heard this analogy somewhere. Pretend the camera crew is following you around. Are you using your time wisely? Are you sitting there with the Haagen-Dazs watching Netflix, or are you up and going out there to improve yourself and make the world a better place? And I love that whole idea of slow incremental improvement in whatever field you're interested in.
Okay, so I have two questions that I ask every guest. So I'm going to ask those to you, and then we're going to have you do this breathing demonstration as our kind of final close of the episode here. So first question is, how has connecting back to that person or that spirit within you changed how you see things in your world?
Oh, that's good. I would say I used to be much more jaded and angry at the world as a teenager, especially kind of Gen X angst that everybody had. If you remember the flannel and the whole grunge scene in the early mid 90s. Yeah. So I have taken that. I have now been able to, I feel, especially through studying some Eastern and Western philosophies and learning how to control your brain and breathing, I now don't take anything personally at all. I think the Book of Four Agreements has got so much good advice. But one of them is I don't take things personally. If things don't go my way, if someone runs into my car, doesn't ruin my day anymore. I go, oh yeah, what else is the world going to throw? I can handle it. You know, there's people who face a lot worse. So that's really changed my point of view, but it's made me a much better parent. And I think I've become so patient. Like nothing fazes me anymore. We have a dog that doesn't remember to go outside sometimes. And it's part of life, you know? So it's changed me and it's changed the way I teach. I try to remember that everyone is going through the same struggle or a similar struggle. That it might be different, but it rhymes with my struggle. You know, everyone's got this and we're all facing it. So I hope that answers your question.
Absolutely, it does. And maybe even a little bit of the second question, because the second question is, how has that connection helped you to become unsilenced in your life?
Oh, that's good. Well, you know what? I'll tell you, I went on this career. I decided 22 years ago to do this full time. And everyone told me I was crazy and everything, but once you believe in yourself enough, you go, well, yeah, only crazy people change the world. So yeah, I am a little crazy, you know? So I went out there. It really gave me the confidence to say, I don't need the security of a 9-to-5 job. I'm going to go ahead and find my own way through the world and do what I love and preach the message that I want to share, which I wish someone would have told me this stuff as a kid. I wish someone would have pulled me aside and said, hey man, you know, get control of yourself, get control of your mind, take it step by step. There's so many things that I would tell someone that nobody told me. And so I've been trying to use my platform at my high schools and colleges and my corporate events to try to tell people, don't forget, you're amazing. You really are. You can learn anything. There's no reason you can't do it. It's a matter of using those 1440 minutes every day wisely. We all get the same amount of time every day, but what can you never get back? That time. You'll never get it back. So become the person you want to be now and do it. But you got to remember, you got to have system. This is the thing. If you've heard of Scott Adams, he writes the Dilbert comic strips.
Yeah.
Scott Adams gives a great presentation where he says goals are for losers. And then everyone goes, oh, and then he goes, well, let me explain. And he says, without a system to get a goal, you have to, if this is your goal, you need to get a system to get there. And that's why you want a short-term goal with a system, because when you look at that long-term goal, it might be years till you get there. And it's depressing to wake up every day and go, I'm not even close. But if you have a short-term goal, you wake up every day and go, I'm a little bit closer because I have these systems in place. I spend an hour every day calling clients. I spend an hour every day, you know, doing my website or doing social media or doing, getting whatever it is you're into. This is different for everyone. So
yeah, and that is, I love that you do that. And I'm going to bring my Eiffel Tower analogy in, because when people are working to do amazing things in their life, it's built by creating a strong foundation, and then your key pillars, like the Eiffel Tower has four key pillars that holds it up. And so you're working to create these things that support you at each next level.
And that's what using your time is about. And if you don't have those, that strong base, and that's so as a parent, I'm always reminding myself going, you know, hey, you're programming these children now with the way you react. So if your child spills a glass of water and you freak out and you, oh my gosh, you made a mess. That child is going to feel guilty every time he spills that water. He's going to feel, and he's going to be on his therapist's couch going, my mom yelled at me about spilling water. But if you can model people spill water all the time, your child's going to be, oh, well, on to the next thing, you know, no big deal, you know, unconditional love and all that. So I just think, and, you know, and it all comes down to parenting. If you can be the parent that is there for your child like this, I think we would see so many fewer problems as adults.
I mean, role modeling and breaking the cycles, that, and that's the important thing. Yes. That if you didn't receive that parenting as a child, that's why this is even more important, because you can break that cycle and you can role model it.
And if you don't know better, you can't do better. So this is why I think you're right in saying you've got to break those cycles. Cause I, you know, in my family, you'd get in trouble if you spilled something. There are people, why did you spill? You're so clumsy. And then your critic goes, I'm so clumsy. My mom's right. I'm always knocking things over. And now your critic is busy looking for things that make you feel that way. You know, go, yep, there's more evidence that I'm clumsy. Oh, look, I didn't do well in PE. And it starts snowballing. It's like a magnet almost, and you just look for the negative
and breaking, you create an identity out of that. And when we believe that identity so long, that forms and shapes our personality.
Yep. And that's where the subconscious gets into it. So as an adult, it's not too late. It's not too late to change that by, you know, the breathing thing I'm going to show you is helpful, and then reminding yourself of these affirmations in an open-minded state. If you don't like the word hypnosis, that word, this is what's hard for me, is people think as a hypnotist, it's some mystical thing or some magical, like I can control my, like I get pulled over by a cop and I'm like, you know, sleep, you will not give me a ticket. That's not the way this works, right? So what to me hypnosis is about, I don't believe in any of the supernatural, like I can't talk to the dead. That's not a thing, okay? But I can get you to open your mind to new possibilities of who you are or who you want to be and give you a new track up here. You know, that's what it's about. I think it's fascinating, because once you get there, then you start being able to give things back to the world in your art, whatever your art is. You give it back to the world.
Once you fix up here.
Yes. And if you're, think of how many business owners have failed how many times before they're successful, you know, and it's because they learned something every lesson, but they never gave up, you know, and it's just, to me, it's just a fascinating topic. I love talking about self-improvement up here. You know, it's very important. And that's the thing. No matter how old you are, you can make yourself, you know, into the person you want to be.
Absolutely. Well, let's have that breathing technique.
So this is, there's a gentleman named Wim Hof. It's W-I-M-H-O-F. And he is an extreme athlete. He's all over the internet. He is known for doing the jumping into the icy lakes and staying there for 15 minutes. But he's developed these breathing techniques that Navy SEALs use and people use before they go on stage. But the one I'm going to share with you today, it's called a physiological sigh.
Okay.
And what it is you're going to take your breath in and out in a certain way that is going to change where your blood is going and your oxygen is going. And when I'm finished, I'll show you once I've demonstrated. So it's very simple. And you're going to want to do this about three times. And first, I want you to take a moment and put yourself in the mind of you giving your first speech as a child, maybe middle school. Think about that. Okay. Now you're a good speaker, right? But back then, were you nervous? Yes, right? Before you're going on stage, you're like, oh my gosh, this is going to be nerve-wracking. So what this breathing technique will do is it will take your nerves and it's going to turn them into excitement instead of nervousness.
Okay.
So what it is you sit up kind of straight and tall and you take two short breaths in and one breath out.
Okay.
All through your nose. And a lot of people like to have their tongue curled up behind their teeth. This is a common Buddhist thing for meditation. Your tongue is pressed against your teeth. They also teach this in martial arts in different disciplines. So some people believe in the chi energy in you. They say that completes your chi flow. I don't know anything about that. I know that this is a great way to relax. And what you do is you want that those two short breaths to match in duration your out breath.
Okay.
So I'm going to demonstrate it for you right now. So you go.
That makes you feel a little more relaxed just doing it.
Exactly. I like to focus on a distant spot. This is a hypnosis thing. I find a spot like maybe a light bulb far away and I just stare at it and I do it. And then here's what's fascinating. If you do the opposite of that breathing, you will induce yourself with anxiety. If you go like this. No, wait, hold on. If you go. You will feel your chest tighten, your lungs will go up, and you'll feel anxious. You will make yourself anxious. And once you're aware of how you breathe when you're anxious, you can identify it, cut it off, and go back to the other breathing. So this is a technique Wim Hof recommends, and it's also been studied at Stanford and other universities. And it's been published in books since the 1930s about how to get control of your breath. And this is what they do to like military, a lot of the military guys, before they go into some scary high risk thing, they all have control of their breathing. If you don't have control of that, you're going to anxiety attack, you know? So
yeah, that whole controls your whole vagus and nerve system. And
it changes. So you're familiar with this then, it sounds like. So it changes the way your physiology, if you change your physiology, it will change the way you think about things. So
yeah, absolutely. And one of the key concepts that I work with people on is that connection back to their own wisdom. And it's really through controlling the breathing. And I even like how you said to focus on the one point, because of that relaxed mind puts you in this almost peripheral awareness where you have a sight heightened, sharpened sense of everything that's happening around you, but a very relaxed sense of that actually really directly connects you back to your intuition or your inner wisdom.
And absolutely,
like a flipping a switch that you can,
it is.
You can do that. Yeah,
it is. And anytime you find yourself where you're needing to make a decision or you're about to do something that's nerve-wracking or nerve-inducing that makes you nervous, doing this breathing will center yourself and bring you back to the moment. And this is things that, like, I think people have known for thousands of years, but science is kind of catching up in why it works and they're explaining it, you know? So it's kind of like this, it's like Buddhism meets, the modern college university researchers. And they're like, yeah, there's a lot to this. You know, there is definitely something there, you know.
I love the book, The Joy of Living by Manuel Rinpoche, because he takes the Eastern philosophy combined with the modern day neuroscientists, and they pair it together to show why the Eastern philosophy, meditation and breathing things work based on the modern day neuroscience. That's
right. I'm fascinated. I've not heard of that book. Thank you for the recommendation. I will look that up and add that to my list.
Yeah. Well, it's been amazing to have you on today. The amazing Arthur, has been amazing.
And I was thrilled to be here. This was so fun. Thank you for inviting me.
So tell people where they can find you if they are interested in having you come into their organization or their high school or wherever. How can they find you?
Oh, well, I speak at events and organizations all over the country. I've been to 38 states, and I love traveling. I love seeing our beautiful country, and I love giving my presentation to like-minded people, or at least give people an idea of what's out there for what I do. And my show, I'm all about showing, not telling. I really like to demonstrate. So throughout my show, I demonstrate different skills I've learned and how they can, have a similar path and hopefully, retrain your brain to what you want to do. So the best place to get a hold of me is my website is professionalshowoff.com. So I show, not tell. Okay. And that's a professional show off. And then I'm also on Facebook and Instagram at Amazing Arthur Entertainment. You can find me there.
Perfect. But we'll have those in the show notes so that they can find you as well.
As someone who advocates for the brain, I try to stay off the social media because that is that'll fry your brain, too much of that.
Agreed. Well, thanks for being here, and we'll look forward to another conversation maybe down the road in the future. So.
Oh, it was fantastic. I look forward to seeing you in the audience on my end when I'm on stage.
Absolutely. Well, thanks to our audience for being along today for the podcast with the amazing Arthur, and I hope that your day, your week, and your life have been enriched by spending this time with us here today. You can find out more about all of the things that we talked about that my work supports through the Becoming Unsilenced podcast and Transcending Limits and how we support you in making the changes that we talked about at my website at www.tslimits.com. Have an amazing day.
Thanks for being here. If you have a topic or question you want to hear more about, send it to us at the email below. Have an inspired day.